weird to say this, but it does have a holiday feel to the trade, even though we've got some questions about China. Good afternoon. You're listening to the American Ag Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. Darren Fessler is joining us today with Lakefront Futures. And when you said to me, doesn't this have a holiday feel to the trade? You nailed it, because it does kind of seem like there's not a lot of movement out there at this point.
No. And as we were talking prior, I mean, unless you're in cattle, which are, you know, $4 or $5 in feeders and fats are moving, I mean, the grain side of things is just feels pretty dead. And not just it feels dead, it is dead. I mean, you look at the option volatility that's come out after the December WASDE report, it feels and is acting like this, that without a big catalyst, macro-wise, China, Black Sea, South America, feels like we're just going to cruise right into the Christmas season, and I mean, we might do this until the end of the year.
So having said that, I mean, how much more of an influence are we going to see, or maybe pressure from China about what they do next with the purchases that they've promised to do by year's end?
You know, I think there's a lot of questions among a lot of traders about that. I hope the administration's right, the U.S. administration's right, in the fact that China steps up to the plate, buys U.S. beans, corn, whatever, buy a lot, right? Because that's really what we need. Now, the other side, though, is does that really happen? Because when you start looking at FOB values, you start looking at CFR values, especially CFR values versus the Gulf and Brazil, theoretically, we're not even close to being competitive. So why would China want to pay $2.50 more a bushel for U.S. beans when Brazil, if they end up having a decent crop, could buy it a lot cheaper? I think when you look at that aspect in that manner, and if they do continue to buy like that, then you have to assume there's something much bigger on the other side that China's gaining than just paying up for U.S. beans. So, which could very well be the case. Now, again, we still don't know 100% about how these tariffs and how this stuff will work into the courts, and how they may, you know, do their final rulings, which could throw a whole loop into this whole thing. But I'm skeptical. I'm optimistic, but I'm very skeptical. 12 is doable. What is not, I think, in the cards, if Brazil don't have some issues, is the 25 million metric tons after this marketing year for three consecutive years. The reason I think that is the only times that China has even come close to those type of imports from the U.S., Brazil was still producing 120, 130, 140 million metric tons. Now they're producing 170, 180 million metric tons. It's a whole different ballgame. And so I think when you look at that, you have to assume, okay, China – are they going to buy, or where are they just going to buy beans to store beans, or are they buying beans because they actually want beans? Are they low on supply? And when you start looking at the Chinese crush data on that, it's not like they're running out of beans. They're actually plush on beans, and crush margins are fine. I mean, it's not like China's pressed to buy beans. I think that there is some goodwill offerings that Trump and Xi Jinping have made with each other, sure, to kind of smooth the waters, if you will. But I'm still very much in the camp that any type of headlines right now that move beans is going to have to come from Brazil. And yes, you'll see some headlines made, because if you look at the extended models in Argentina, Santa Fe, Cordoba, maybe some areas of Buenos Aires, those areas may start to get dry over the next 30 to 45 days. But I want to remind people is that Brazil is three times the bean producer Argentina. Nothing to take away from Argentina. Issues are real if it continues to be drier in nature, but it's not dry. I always like to say the South American issues always seem to hit the U.S. markets, and the U.S. markets move quicker than those news with, even if we have our own domestic issues. So those issues that are in Brazil, they just seem like the market grabs it and runs with it, even though we don't know all the facts yet. And so that's where we are. Right now, South America is off to a very good start. Is there issues? Yes, there's always going to be issues. But right now, they're on the way to at least 170 million metric ton crop. And when it comes to that late January to early March time frame, it's going to be more than interesting of how China handles this. Because I'm skeptical they're going to pay up to $2.50 or more per bushel just to buy U.S. beans.
You know, you said something to me before we started today's market wrap-up was corn cannot run without soybeans or wheat.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way. I think corn has a tremendous story. I think when you look at the demand side, anybody that's not impressed by the corn demand we have is living under a rock. Corn demand has been stellar. And I don't know how much more corn demand we can expect with crude oil under $58 a barrel. I think ethanol is doing all it can. We've been pretty vocal. I mean, me and you have talked about this cattle market for a couple years now, saying, hey, you know, the number of head are not out there. So I do think there is some feed residual adjustments that will come into play here. The biggest thing for corn, the biggest driver, the catalyst that could move the corn market is the January report. There is no doubt in my mind that this crop is not 186. This crop is not the crop we seen last year. And I think there's multiple reasons for that. I think we had a heck of a lot of disease pressure in parts of the Iowa and Illinois, even Nebraska. And I think that North Dakota had a tremendous crop, Northeast South Dakota, tremendous crop, but it's not Iowa. It's not going to be enough to make up for it. The other issue that I think last year's crop was much larger than the USDA led us to believe. And my tinfoil hat tells me I think they're trying to make up for some of that in the 25-26 marking year balance sheet. But in general, I think a lot of the things, when you look at the 10-day correlations, everything seems to be very closely tied to the S&P 500 and the equity markets. So we have to watch that very closely. But again, with wheat being somewhat lackluster, beans pulling back, it seems corn wants to run, but you have the other two majors trying to just kind of hold it back.
So are you bullish this cattle complex at all?
Well, I'm certainly bullish up to a point, right about now, because I think this cattle market has been extremely overdone and oversold here. But where this fats and feeders market is at the moment, we're at a very critical technical point where it's a decision now. Do we continue on moving higher, or do we start to set back here? We've reached the 50 and 62% retracement levels. We're smack dab between both of them. Decision time for the market here. Again, I think that we've seen a little bit less talking and a little bit less bearish tone in the administration. And I think cattle has bounced off some of those. So again, I think the next $2, $3, $4 here in both of these markets is a very, very big turning point for the technical momentum traders.
All right. Well, we appreciate your thoughts. Of course, joining us today, Darren Fessler. He is with Lakefront Futures. And a quick reminder to everybody that commodity futures and options do involve a substantial risk of loss not suitable to all investors. And that is the Thursday market wrap-up right here on the American Ag Network.